the universe, namely the possible shapes of the universe itself. It's my favorite subject because, well, I worked a lot on these aspects. I remember that I wrote in one of my books that when I was young, I was looking, of course, at the starry sky in the south of France, with still a little bit more stars than here. At the time, there were no lights. But in fact, already at that time, I wondered what happened between the stars in the dark. And I suspected already that in dark space was not empty space, and that further research could give answers to very old questions. For instance, a question about the size of the universe. Is it finite or infinite? As you know, it's a very old question, already posed by very old astronomy. And with, of course, two options. The option that was chosen by Aristoteles, Ptolemy, and later Copernicus of Kepler was a solution of a finite universe. The problem is that this finite universe had a boundary, had an edge. And this poses a problem which is called the edge paradox, because if the universe has a physical edge, what happens when you go to the edge and you just, for instance, put the arm outside, but there is no outside. The other option also proposed by Greek philosophers, the school of atomists like Democritus or Epicurus, and much later by Giordano Bruno, who was burnt for that, as you know, and Descartes in France and Newton in England, was a proposal of infinite space. So in fact, this problem could not be really dealt with good mathematics, and especially the problem of a finite space with the edge paradox, until in fact the 19th century. In the 19th century, some geometers and mathematicians like Lobachevsky or Riemann invented the fascinating concept of non-Euclidean geometry, and other mathematician about some topological properties of space. Non-Euclidean geometry are just a geometry in which the ordinary rules of geometry that we learn at school are no more valid, but they allow to have perfectly consistent on the mathematical point of view, I mean, consistent models for space, and including finite space without a boundary. So this is a little bit difficult way of for visualizing finite volume without a boundary. So I will just give two simple examples. The first example is just the 3D generalization of the surface of a sphere, which is just a 2D space, which is of course is finite, since the straight line is a great circle, for instance, and which has no boundary, because you found no boundary when you travel along a great circle. And just when you add a dimension in order to be in a volume, we can define with Riemann what we call the hypersphere. So in this kind of representation, just imagine that here, this is the interior of the sphere, is just the northern hemisphere of the hypersphere, and the other sphere is just the southern hemisphere. So you can start from inside, of course, the hypersphere, from any point, for instance, from here in Milano, you take a rocket and you just travel straight on a straight line, even if the space is curved, okay? And after maybe some billion light years of travel, you just arrive here, which is just the kind of the equivalent of the equator. It's not a physical boundary. It's just a line of coordinate which separates the northern hemisphere from the southern hemisphere. So in fact you are here because it's exactly the same point. And you continue to travel straight on. And when you continue to travel always straight on, finally you go back home without having coming back on your way. So just a simple example of a finite volume when you travel straight on always, and you can go back home because and you met no boundary. And very important to notice that in this kind of very simple geometrical demonstration, at any moment I needed to invoke a kind of outside space which should contain the hypersphere. The hypersphere could perfectly represent the shape of the full universe. I will go back later in my lecture, which perfectly could represent the full universe. With all the points of the universe would be inside a hypersphere, and the outside would have no meaning at all, of course, because by definition the universe would be the set of all possible points in space and time. On the right, you have a second example, just a 2D example, but later I give a three-dimensional example, which is called a torus, and it's another example of a two-dimensional surface, which is finite, without a boundary, and the straight line are just a series of circles. Okay. So with this kind of new geometry and topological spaces, we have the possibility to avoid the edge paradox, and we will be able to introduce the possibility that space at large scale, namely the cosmic space, can be a finite without an edge. Okay. So now more generally, of course, in order to be able to speak with some cleverness about the shape of space, it involves geometry, of course, geometrical models, and in fact the description of space will depend on the scale at which you will analyze the shape of the universe. In fact, in most cases, for astronomical purpose or just for physical purpose, namely in classical mechanics and all that, you generally assume that in fact space is just the ordinary one, Euclidean space without curvature and without special topology. Okay. So, of course, I will not be interested in this very special case. At a deeper level, namely when you include gravity, as you know probably, and I will come back again on this the slide after, in general relativity, which is the Einstein theory of gravitation, the gravity is no more described by a force, the Newton force, but is described with the curvature of space and time. So at this level, involving general relativity and cosmology, you have a curvature of space. You can have a very strong local curvature, for instance, that one produced by black holes, as I shall describe later, or, on the average, smooth curvature all over the whole space, describing the cosmological space. And we'll also discuss that. And after that, you can ask, because general relativity is just a local theory, it doesn't describe the possible shape of the full universe, so you have to consider the upper level, which is a relatively new domain of cosmology that I introduced with some colleagues now maybe 15 years ago, which is called cosmic topology, in which it's possible now to really have geometrical description of the full universe, including the question about is it finite or without an edge, with a special shape or infinite, and something like that. And we have some surprises in the variety of models that can be used for describing the shape of the full universe. And now, if I come just at the end of the conference, maybe I will tell just a few words about the lower level, would be the description of space at very, very small scales, namely at the quantum scales. Maybe some of you have heard about the so-called Planck length, which is a kind of minimal length that physics can be is able to speak about. And we are in a very new domain, still in construction, the domain of quantum gravity, which is a very complex but fascinating domain, which opens new perspective. Okay. So we begin at this scale, namely the scale where a curvature of space-time becomes important because we have strong gravitational field. So as I told just in the beginning, now you know that gravitation is described by the Einstein theory of general relativity, which involves, in fact, curvature of space-time. So, while very common, usual metaphor of the basic idea is to compare just the shape of space to the kind of the elastic fabric of space-time. So, without mass, namely without gravity, you have just no special structure. You have just the ordinary Euclidean geometry with light rays going on straight lines and all that. And as soon as you have a massive body, the sun or black hole, something like that, you have a local distortion of space and time just around this body. And now gravity is interpreted no more than by an attraction force, like in Newton's theory, but just the ordinary consequences of the curved space-time. So every object, a light ray, or a planet, or comet, or something like that, or a particle passing close to a massive body, just follows the what we call the geodesics, namely the equivalent of straight lines, but in a curved space-time background. And we recovered, of course, not only all the results of Newton, but much better results, so we have a more powerful theory of gravity with general relativity. So, quickly, when the theory was proposed by Einstein at the beginning of the 20th century, the question arose that what could happen when we have a very large mass of a very compact body, what kind of deformation of space-time it could produce? Okay, because in fact the Einstein equation just relate the degree of curvature of space-time to the distribution of mass and matter and energy and the universe. So we can solve the Einstein equation for describing, for instance, a very important astrophysical process, which is called the gravitational collapse of massive stars. As you know, stars shine because they have a thermonuclear reaction in their center, and they burn the hydrogen and helium and all that to produce energy. But of course, at the end of their lives, the hydrogen and helium is exhausted, and the core of the star begins to contract. And in fact, the astrophysical theory say that above a given critical mass, nothing during the gravitational collapse of the core of very massive stars, nothing can stop the gravitational collapse, and the prediction of the stellar evolution for very massive stars is just the production of this fascinating object that is a black hole. So it's not the purpose today of my conference to speak about physical, fascinating physical and astrophysical properties of black hole, just to have a few images and including movies about the effect, how the black holes distort, in fact, the shape of space. As I told you, in general relativity, every massive body distorts locally the shape of space. But of course, black hole is the most spectacular object which creates the most spectacular distortion of the shape of space. And I will briefly discuss how black hole distorts the shape of space around it, next behind it, and to finish the part about black holes inside it. Okay, now, how a black hole distorts the shape of space around it. When you are in ordinary space, for instance, in the solar system, you know gravity is very weak, so in fact the Newtonian approximation is a very good one, so we can say that we are in a Newtonian space-time. And if you look at just a spherical object surrounded by circular rings, this of course Saturn, you just see the normal picture of ellipses, because you just see the circular rings in projection, and you have no special optical distortion. Now, in the late 1970s, I wondered, in fact, the question, what would happen, in fact, in very strongly curved space-time, in which instead of having an ordinary body like Saturn, you have a black hole. So before making complicated calculation and numerical simulation, you can just guess the result. Here you have the black hole, here you have the equivalent of the rings, okay, which is called, which can be, for instance, what we call an accretion disk, which is in fact a gaseous structure which surrounds many black holes in the universe. And here you have the observer with a photographic plate far away. So due to the strong deviation of light rays due to the presence of the black hole, you see in fact that in that case no part of the disk is hidden, contrary to the case of Saturn, in which you have this part, which is of course hidden by the sphere of Saturn. Here, all the images can be seen, so you have this shape. And still more spectacular, light rays leaving from the other side of the disk, in ordinary space they should travel here, but due to the strong gravitational field, you have a secondary image which gives also a picture of the other side of the disk. So in that case, the black hole distorts so strongly the shape of space and time that it allows to see both the upside and the other side of a given object. And after that, of course, you can integrate correctly the equation and to produce very realistic images of a black hole space-time, namely a black hole which is here, surrounded by an accretion disk, and you see all the distortion. Here you have the primary images with differences in the intensity of the luminosity due to various effects, and here you have a part of the other side of the disk. So we have performed with many collaborators some movies, but I have no time today to show these movies in which we can move in this kind of a landscape. Now I want to pass the second question, how black hole distorts space behind it. Namely, you have a landscape with stars, galaxy, everything. And you can just imagine what could happen if in front of this landscape you have a black hole. Of course, the black hole will distort the landscape. And this is a very common prediction of general relativity, which is called the gravitational lensing. Okay? In the gravitational lens, in fact, you don't necessarily have to have a black hole to produce this effect. Any massive object, like for instance a galaxy here, will produce gravitational lensing due to the fact that, compared to the observer, the astronomer on Earth, when you look at a very distant object, for instance a faraway galaxy like a quasar, but just on the line of sight, you have an intermediate massive body, like a galaxy, a cluster of a galaxy, and all that. You see that the light rays follow various trajectories to reconverge to the observer. So for the observer, you have in fact an optical illusion, where you don't see the object A here, but you see in several places behind the gravitational lens. So this is a very simple prediction of general relativity, which is very well proved now by astronomical observation. Here you have two astronomical gravitational lenses that you can see here. Here you have the intermediate galaxy, and here you have four images of the same galaxy, which is behind this one, okay? And here, you have another gravitational lens, where here you have the intermediate galaxy, and here you have a spiral galaxy, which is very distorted by the curvature of space-time. Of course, you can guess that in a perfect situation, with the spherical bodies perfectly aligned, for symmetry reason, the optical illusion should create, in fact, what we call an Hansen ring, a perfect circle where the ghost images are distributed. But of course, the nature never realizes this perfect configuration. So, in fact, in real astronomical lenses, we just see parts of the ring. Okay, now, what would happen if instead of an ordinary object, a non-collapse object, we have a black hole? Of course, you can guess that the gravitational lensing will be much more spectacular. For the moment, our telescopes have not good enough resolution to see gravitational lensing produced by black holes, but we can compute this and make a numerical simulation of various landscapes in front of which we have a black hole. So I show you a few spectacular pictures that have been calculated a few years ago by my collaborator Alain Riazuelo. Here you see a real sky in the southern hemisphere. Of course, you see here the Milky Way. This is the central bulge of the Milky Way in the direction of Sagittarius. Okay, and here you have the real stars. For instance, these two stars here. I'm just looking for my arrow. I lost my arrow. Okay. If I had a pointer, maybe, no, it would be better. May I have a laser, something like that? Okay. Anyway, so now this is the ordinary landscape. Now we imagine that just in front of this real landscape, we have a black hole in this direction. And now we make a calculation where we integrate the trajectory of the light rays coming from this landscape, but distorted by the presence of the black hole, and we get this. So this very nice image gives what would be seen if a black hole was in front of the Milky Way. So, well, it's not surprising to see that in the... I would like to have my arrow... Okay.
Have you went to the upper mouse? If you want to use this.
Yes, but I don't find the mouse. Okay. Anyway. So you have a part of the primary image of the Milky Way which is distorted in the vicinity of the black hole, but more interesting. Okay, fine. Which? With that? Okay, that's fine. Perfect. Okay, so you have the primary images. Okay, and here you have something strange. You see the full Milky Way. In fact, not only the part of the Milky Way which is just in the field of your telescope, but the full Milky Way. The reason is that, in fact, the black hole distorts so much the full space-time, which, okay, yes, what do you prefer, the row or this? You can have both, in fact. Like I am ambidextrous, I can use my both hands, okay? So, in fact, as I told you, the ideal situation would produce, in fact, the Einstein ring, which would be here, okay? Of course, in this view, it's not the ideal situation, it's just a theoretical circle. But inside this theoretical circle, you have a full duplication, a duplication of the full external universe. Not only the stars which are in this field, but the star of all the two hemispheres of the celestial sphere. Okay? So it's the reason why you see the full Milky Way. And you have all the duplicata of external stars inside. So you will see better in the other thing. Again, you have a familiar landscape. Well, I don't know if it is familiar to you because you have to go in the southern hemisphere to admire the two Magellanic cloud, the large Magellanic cloud and the small Magellanic clouds, which are, as you know probably, just small galaxies going around our own Milky Way galaxy. Okay, and here you have a part of the Milky Way. If you don't remember exactly, okay, the things, here you have the Southern Cross, right? Here you have a bright stars, Acherna and Canopus, and here you have Alpha and Beta Centauri. I recall you that Alpha Centauri is the closest star from the Sun. Now, well, this is a real landscape. Now we have a black hole in this direction, and we calculate the new image, and we get this fantastic picture. Again, I repeat, every point of the picture has been calculated by integration of the path of the light rays given the properties of curved space-time by the black hole. So, again, you see two images of the large Magellanic cloud. The first image distorted in the shape of a crescent, okay, and the secondary image. The same for the small cloud here, primary image, second image. Canopus here and here, all that. So, in fact, again, the theoretical Einstein ring is here, and inside the ring, you have a duplication of the full universe. It's the reason why, again, you see the full Milky Way, whereas outside, you have just a very small part of the Milky Way, but here, you have the full Milky Way inside the theoretical Einstein ring. And in order to recognize better all the ghost images, okay, so the first image is a large Magellanic cloud, secondary image just symmetrical compared to the center of the black hole. The same for the small Magellanic cloud and for the stars. Here is the Southern Cross. Here you can guess here, very distorted, the small one, the Southern Cross, which is here, Canopus, Acherna, and so on. Full duplication. Okay? And now, again, the same landscape, but you will see a movie, because we imagine now that a black hole will pass like that, exactly in front of the large Magellanic cloud. And you will see in the movie that at the moment when the black hole is just at the center, you will get the perfect Hansen ring, namely the image of the Large Magellanic Cloud distributed along a perfect circle. So I have just to leave for a moment the PowerPoint to show you this movie, which is that one. Okay, we can go. So what you see a lot of small bright points around the black hole, because in fact the Hansen ring is here, and inside you have the duplication of all the stars, the bright star, maybe 1,000 brightest stars of all the celestial sphere, which gather around the black hole. Here you have the Magellanic Clouds. It becomes more and more distorted in the shape of a crescent. It's the secondary image. Okay, so the black hole passes, and now it passes exactly in the middle. And if I stop here, okay, you see the perfect Hansen ring, namely the image of the Magellanic Cloud is distributed along this perfect circle. Which is the Hansen ring, and inside you have a full duplication of the external universe, and the black hole moves again, and the images are dissociated, and you recover. And you have also interesting phenomena of amplification of light. You see some of stars with light very much amplified by the gravitational lensing. And in the future, some astronomers hope to use gravitational lensing by black holes in order to have a kind of gravitational telescopes in order to see very far away objects that without a black hole, they would be invisible, and due to the gravitational lensing produced by a black hole, it would become visible due to the amplification of light. So there are some examples of a very strongly distorted shape of the universe due to the presence of this fascinating object, which are the black holes. Okay. Now I go back to the presentation. Okay. So we have seen this. Now the last question about black holes: what happened inside a black hole? What is the shape of the universe inside a black hole? Well, you recall that as I told you in general relativity, you can figure out the shape of space like a kind of elastic tissue, something like that, which is elastic rubber, which is distorted by the presence of a mass. This is, in fact, a mathematical representation of the kind of distortion you can have with an ordinary star. Okay, so you have, of course, just a strong curvature in the part occupied by the matter of the star, and outside the gravitation becomes weak, and so the curvature of space-time becomes flat. Okay. Now, what happens in this kind of geometrical calculation? What happens in the case where instead of an ordinary star, you put a collapsed star, namely a black hole, and you have this very strange structure, fascinating structure, which is called a wormhole. Namely, the possibility that you have, in fact, the distortion of space-time is such spectacular that you have a kind of connection between two regions of the universe. This is, in fact, a representation of the 2D universe. And you can see, in fact, that if you want to go from here to here, if you stay in the normal universe outside the black holes, you have a very long travel to do. Whereas if you can borrow this structure, you have a shortcut to travel in space and time. And this is precisely one of the most fascinating properties of black hole, that the possibility that in some cases they could produce wormholes, namely a shortcut to travel in space and time. As you know, the idea, well, it's just now a theoretical idea, whereas the black holes are no more theoretical objects, they are proved by astronomical observation. Wormholes are not at all observed in the universe, and well, physicists are still wondering if wormholes really exist in the universe. Well, it's a good hope for interstellar travel, and you have seen in science fiction movies or novels, of course, the idea of wormholes as a Stargate and something like that. So, very seriously, always with my collaborator Alain Riazuelo, we have calculated, in fact, the geometrical structure, what would be the landscape when, if we penetrate into a black hole and we try to cross this special region of a wormhole. So I propose you a flight into a wormhole. So again, I leave the PowerPoint and I show you this. Okay, it's again a numerical simulation. Well, no more star, we are just the equivalent of a chessboard, just to represent space-time, okay? And already you can see that the chessboard is distorted, of course, compared to the ordinary chessboard with straight lines, due to the presence of the black hole. The black hole is here. Here you have the external space. Here you have the equivalent of the Einstein ring. So here you have a duplication, a very distorted duplication of the full space-time. And okay, so we are outside the black hole and we have a rocket and we go into the black hole step by step. We approach the black hole. Okay. We are outside, still outside, but closer and closer from the surface of the black hole, which is called the event horizon, still outside. We have chosen a very big black hole in order not to be destroyed by a very strong gravitational field. So it's possible with supermassive black hole that exist in the center of galaxies. So we are very close to the black hole, but not yet inside. Not yet inside. And here, we are inside. We know that we are inside the black hole because just appear in the middle a very distorted images of the other side of the universe. A chessboard. But very distorted. So we say, great, it's okay, we have a shortcut, so we go to the other side of the universe, but as the travel continues, everything becomes dark, and everything is finished, because in fact, the wormhole blocks the passage of any spaceship or even an elementary particle, because in this kind of simulation, wormhole is a very unstable structure, and even if it exists in the ideal case, any perturbation produced by, for instance, by a spaceship which goes inside distort the wormholes and block, in fact, the passage. So we don't know yet if wormholes exist in the universe, and even if they exist, if we can travel through the wormholes. Some physicists have imagined some processes, a little bit like science fiction, but with some calculation that could that could allow to travel through a black hole by injecting inside the wormhole a kind of negative energy which would prevent the collapse of the of the wormhole. Okay, now we go again to the main presentation. What I have to do, I don't remember. Ah, yeah, okay. Here. And we now pass to the upper level. So we leave the black hole, even if there are a lot of questions unsolved, and we pass to the full-scale universe. Here you have a fantastic picture of the large-scale structure of the universe in which All the points that you see are not stars but galaxies, essentially. Okay, and in this picture you see in fact that more or less the galaxies are uniformly distributed in the universe. And this is a very important property which allows us to calculate exact solution of Einstein's equation in order to propose what we call cosmological model, relativistic cosmological models, namely a solution of gravitational field equation of describing not only the local shape of the universe around black hole, but the full universe in which we assume a uniform distribution of galaxies, of matter and energy. And the great discovery, which has been done in the 1920 and 1930 by two guys called Alexander Friedman and Georges Lemaître, is that in fact, as soon as you assume that the distribution of matter energy in the universe is homogeneous and uniform, the elastic fabric of space-time cannot be static. It's necessarily dynamical. For instance, you can have an elastic fabric in expansion. Okay, so as you know, it is the model of the expansion of the universe, which explains with general relativity the apparent velocity of galaxies, of faraway galaxies. So, in fact, the calculation gives the so-called Big Bang models, calculated, as I told you, by Friedman and Lemaître maybe 80 years ago. There are three solutions, as you know. The first one, so here you have the time, here you have space. The first solution, you have a closed universe, beginning in initial configuration, very compact, concentrated configuration, which is called now a Big Bang. You have a first phase of expansion, maximum radius, and a collapse of the full universe, which finished in a big crunch. In the second solution, you have a perpetual expansion. Okay, so we have an open universe with a deceleration. And here, the third solution is also an open universe, perpetual expansion, but with an acceleration of the expansion velocity. Of course, now we observed that we are in a phase of expansion of the universe. So the question is, in which model the real universe is? Is it one, two, or three? In all three cases, when we extrapolate into the past, we, of course, obtain the obvious fact that there is a beginning of expansion, that is called the Big Bang. But for the future, you can see that the future of the universe are very different according if it is closed, so finite in the future time, or open, namely infinite in future time. In fact, we think that we can have now more or less credible answer to this question since the last 10 years due to very deep observation of the universe, looking at more or less the initial condition of the universe, and now the initial condition of the universe as are observed in what we call the fossil radiation. Which is in fact the remnant today, observed today, of the very hot and young universe when the universe was only 400,000 years old after the Big Bang. It was a very hot plasma. It became transparent at this time, namely the light could escape from matter, and it produced, in fact, now a bath of radiation. 40 billion years later, namely now, we are still in this bath, but a cool bath, a very cool bath of radiation, with an average temperature of only about 3 degrees above the absolute zero scale, namely minus 270 Celsius degrees. Okay, and here you have this what we call the cosmic microwave background radiation, and this picture represents the full sky observed in the range of microwaves, which is a range where this cosmic microwave background radiation can be observed. And we have encoded very small fluctuation at the scale of very small fluctuation of the intensity of this fossil radiation. And in fact, it is one of the most important of images of all the history of astronomy, because here we see the very young universe before it could produce any star, any structure, any galaxy. We can just see here in this fluctuation the seeds of what will be formed in the later universe. So, since I just concentrated my talk on the shape of the universe, I just to tell you that interpretation, recent interpretation of this map, which was obtained by a NASA telescope called WMAP in 2003, gives us the suggestion that what we call the standard Big Bang model, or the concordance model of cosmology, is just the evolution of the universe from the Big Bang, which is still an unknown process up to today, passing through different phases of structuration. The concordance model suggests that in fact we are in an accelerating universe. Okay, but in fact, in the standard interpretation, and now I go back to really the subject of my talk about the shape of the full universe. It is generally assumed, or it was generally assumed until the last 10 years, that in fact, on the average, the curvature of space was very, very small, near to zero, so that space was at large scale more or less Euclidean and infinite. And in fact, as we shall see in the rest of the lecture, we can really question, without of course putting into question this result, namely that the energy of the universe is essentially dominated by a kind of dark energy which produces accelerated expansion. We have alternative models showing that even with this evolution, time evolution of the universe, we have not necessarily infinite Euclidean space. So now the second part is just the usual question, well, the very old question: what is the size and the shape of the full space? Of course, you have to distinguish the observable universe and the physical one. The observable universe, by construction, we are at the center, and there is a horizon, which is just a limit of visibility of the universe. If you are a sailor in the middle of the sea, you don't see the full surface of the Earth, because the surface is curved. So you have an horizon, which is a circle. It's not a physical boundary, of course. You know that beyond the horizon there are still seas and continents. So we are navigators in space-time. Space-time is curved by matter and energy, according to general relativity. So there is a cosmological horizon, and all the galaxies and stars that we see are inside this cosmological horizon, and by construction we are at the center. Okay, so it's just the observable universe relative to us. But now the real universe, well, the first assumption is that the real universe is infinite. Okay, the problem is that it is not testable, of course. It's impossible to have a measurement about the infinite size of the real universe. But thanks to non-Euclidean geometry, anthropology, we shall see that we have more interesting alternative models. For instance, you can have a hypersphere. I recall you, a hypersphere is a finite space without a boundary. So the universe, real universe, could be a hypersphere, but with a radius greater than the observable universe. So, it could be testable if the hypersphere is not too great compared to the observable universe. But since 20 years, I explored with some collaborators a rather surprising proposal, according to which the real universe could be finite without a boundary, but smaller than the observable universe. So what I call the multiply connected universe, or wraparound universe, on in French, univers chiffonné, and in Italian, stropicciato, universo, just this idea that we could have a geometrical model of physical universe, small, and producing a global optical illusion, multiplying the images of real object into ghost images. And this is precisely a model which is testable. So I'll just give you a very simple example. Maybe you remember what I said about the torus, okay, which is a two-dimensional surface, which is finite without an edge, and is very comprehensible when you have these very simple video games. The rocket never leaves the screen of the computer, because just the screen of the edges of the screen are just glued together, and in fact it's exactly the equivalent of a flat rocket traveling at the surface of a torus. Okay, so now of course we can generalize this kind of structure in three dimensions to get, for instance, what we call the hyper torus. But just before showing you a visualization of this very fascinating kind of space, I just want to explain you how it is precisely this kind of finite space without an edge, but and with special connectivity properties, since here we have glued together the edges in order to eliminate the edges, to produce in fact optical illusion. Okay, so it is called the topological lensing effect. In ordinary space between two objects, there is only one light ray. As soon as you assume connection into points of space, here you have a cylinder and here you have a full torus, you see that between these two objects there are a lot of light rays, which gives in fact many images. So in fact the observable universe is in this very simple model of a 2D universe, it is this. So the physical space is that one, the real space, but due to the connectivity properties, you produce multiple images, and so the observable universe is a part of the multiplication of the basic cell, in the part included in the observable horizon. So here you would have the observable universe, which would be greater than the physical universe, which implied that these objects are just ghost images of the object which are in fact in the physical space. So now the generalization of the torus is just called the hyper torus. It's easier to imagine what kind of lensing effect you would have. In fact, so here the universe, the real universe, is just represented by the volume of a cube or a parallelepiped. We have put only one object, for instance the Earth, at the center. We have just computed the ghost, the distribution of the ghost images of the Earth, and of course we have a very regular network, like a little bit some atoms in a crystal. But this is a very simple model, a very naive model. The universe could be like that. In fact, it's not completely excluded. But we have explored much more interesting shape of space. For instance, the so-called Poincaré dodecahedral space. What is a little bit more complicated, but just like a little bit in a video game, a 3D video game, assume that you are inside this kind of balloon, okay, structure with pentagonal faces, but the faces are not real faces. Namely, this face is glued together with the opposite one. So when you travel inside with a rocket, for instance, when you arrive here, okay, here instead of leaving, because of course it's impossible to leave from space, in fact you re-enter on the other side, like in the video game, and we can show that in fact this describes what we call a Poincaré dodecahedral space, where the fundamental shape of space is just a spherical dodecahedron, and with the where the observable space is just a mosaic formed with 120 dodecahedra. Okay? Well, so since it's a little bit to understand this kind of structure, with my collaborator Jeff Weeks, which is an American expert in mathematics and topology, we have designed a kind of navigator distorted space, and I show you the optical illusion, what would be created precisely by a spherical dodecahedron. So we travel here, you see the universe. The real space is just the the laser is dead. So the other one. Okay. Huh? Oh yeah, okay. We are inside. Or I can change the direction and I can accelerate a little bit. Ah, okay, it's better like that. Okay, and we can. So we have a lot of ghost images of the Earth, and this gives like the example of the very complicated structure of the space and the optical illusion that it could create. Okay, now it's almost finished. We have to go back to cosmology. Of course, this is nice in mathematics, but we are supposed also to do cosmological models, namely to prove that one of these models could be a good one to describe the observation. So I already showed you this picture of the fossil radiation, the cosmic microwave background, and in fact, the fluctuation of luminosity in the microwave intensity is in fact a little bit the analogous of the vibration of the very young universe, as like if the universe was a kind of a musical instrument, for instance a drum head, and by analyzing the fundamental harmonics of the cosmic drum head, we recover most of the properties of the musical instrument, namely of the Jung universe. And we construct this kind of curves, which gives, in fact, the fundamental vibrational modes of the universe. In red, you have, in fact, the standard cosmological model, which assumed that space was flat and infinite. And in black, with error bars, of course, you have the measurements. Okay, so you have several conclusions in science and physics. You always compare theoretical models with observational data and to see if it fits well together. So here, the position and the amplitude of the main peak, which is in fact the equivalent of the fundamental musical mode of the Jung universe, gives you the curvature of space. And the result is that, in fact, the space is very close to be flat, but not exactly, and in fact the present data suggests that the space could be slightly positively curved. Okay? Well, so this is not a big surprise, but the big surprise comes from this part, where you see a very large discrepancy between the theoretical model of flat infinite space with the observational data. You see, in fact, a lack of the vibrational power of the real universe at large angular scales, namely at large wave lengths. And this can be interpreted by the fact that in fact space could be finite with a special shape in order to explain this vibrational mode, because if you remember the analogy with a musical instrument, if you take for instance a string and you play the string, of course the string has a finite length, So when you play the string, you have the main note, the fundamental. You have the upper harmonics, but in the lower tones, you have a cutoff, of course, in the larger wavelengths, because you cannot have wavelengths of the string greater than the size of the string. So it could be the same with the universe, and so we have proposed that if we don't see large wavelengths modes in the observed universe, the reason is that the space is in fact smaller than we see in the cosmic microwave background. And again, we go back to the Poincaré dodecahedral space, because which has been called in fact the football universe, because in this kind of structure, we have computed the vibrational modes, and we recover very well the observational data. So in fact, when we published this paper almost 10 years ago now, we predicted we reproduced correctly the observation of the time, we predicted a slightly positively curved universe, and we predict some patterns creating in fact ghost images of some structure. So now the model has been much discussed by various people in the world, and we have not yet a definite answer about the shape of space, but we have made this proposal is that compared to the observable universe, for which we can estimate the size of the radius in gigalight years, the physical universe would be a little bit like that, just a 2D representation. But you see so that in fact the physical universe is slightly smaller than the observable one. In fact, the volume of physical space, of the dodecahedral space, is 80% the volume of the observable universe. So we should have a cosmic lens, not a very spectacular one. We would not see a hundred of ghost images of a galaxy, of course, but it would be subtle. In fact, the signature of the model should be, in fact, in the fact that in the cosmic microwave background, some points would be exactly the same in opposite direction. So in the data, we have to search what we call the match circle, namely points which would be the same, and they would be recognized as the same, because along the circle we would get exactly the same pattern of temperature fluctuation. And it would be a real signature that this point would be the same. And the dodecahedral space just predicts six pairs of antipodal matched circles twisted by 36 degrees. And we expect the results of the new European telescope, the Planck telescope, which was launched a few years ago. And the last result will be delivered in April. And, we can expect to have a positive or a negative answer to the existence of the matched circle. Okay. Just to finish, five more minutes, if I am allowed to do, just to discuss, in fact, now the new ideas about the possible shape of the universe at very, very small scales, namely in the framework of quantum gravity theory. Of course, one of the aims of describing the shape of space at all structure is in fact to relate all the scales. If we assume, for instance, that the universe has a strange topology, like the Poincaré dodecahedral sphere, hypersphere, we could in fact have a physical justification in quantum gravity theory, namely try to link the small scale and the large scale. It's now really out of the range of our physical theory, but maybe in the future it will be possible. So what about quantum gravity? Well, a lot of ideas. A nice idea, which was proposed maybe 40 years ago by John Wheeler, is the idea of the space-time foam, namely that at ordinary scale, even at the atomic scale, in fact the structure of space-time looks smooth, okay, but as soon that we go deeper and deeper and smaller and smaller smaller scale, it is no more smooth, and at the scale of the Planck length, in fact we would have a very complicated, both in curvature and in topology, very complicated structure and fluctuating shape of space, which has been described as a foam. Now there is a very nice theory which is called the loop quantum gravity theory, based on this idea of the space-time foam, which assumes in fact that at a very deep level space is not a continuous. It is discrete. Namely, there would be atoms of space and atoms of space and atoms of time. Okay, so space would be described rather like a network. Here you have the atoms of space, of course with a very small volume, and here you have the relation, a little bit like in a neural network. Okay. For describing the process of the mind. Here you have the relation between the atom of space, which gives you all the properties of elementary particles. And this is the shape of space at a given moment. This is called a spin network. And evolving in time, it evolves step by step, because you have atom of time, and so you have step by step evolution of the spin network to produce what is called a spin foam. So this is one possible approach for the shape of space at the very intimate scale of the Planck length. Now we have, and I will finish with that, we have another possibility, very much more studied, which is the so-called string theory. You know that in string theory the idea is just to assume that all the elementary particles can be described in terms of only two families of objects, closed strings or open strings. And in fact the nature of elementary particle just depends on the vibrational modes of this very elementary structure. Okay, so this is a very nice idea for unifying all the interaction, including gravity and the other interaction. But as you know, probably there is a price to pay. This is the string theory. Works only if you introduce extra dimension of space. Okay, so this complicates the geometrical description of space, but this opens very interesting consideration. For instance, the additional dimension. Here, in fact, we add just only two dimensions, but in fact, in the real string theory, we have to add seven extra dimensions to the three ordinary dimensions. So in the full string theory, we would have a fundamental space with 10 dimensions of space and 1 dimension of time. Okay, but just to give an idea of the complexity of the things, even in 2 dimensions, when you add just on the background, which is here the plane, you just add at each point 2 extra dimensions which are closed, namely compactified. The topology plays again a very important role. Here you have a sphere, and here you have a torus, and this produces 2 universes with completely different properties. Okay, so in fact, as I told you, generally you add not 2 dimensions but 7, and you produce what we call the Calabi-Yau manifolds, which is in fact the description of the 7 extra dimensions. And in fact, people have shown that the topology, topological properties of this extra dimension generates very different models of the of the universe. And this is in fact one of the problems. It is both a fascinating property of the string theory, but it's a problem. It's a problem because there are so many solutions. In fact, we estimate now that there are 10 to the 500 solutions of string theory, so that maybe it will never be proved. So it's not obvious that string theory is a good way. Okay, so it's very quick for describing these complicated things, just to give you an idea of the richness of geometry and topology to describe the shape of space at a different scale. So my conclusion is this famous quotation by Albert Einstein, and I'm sure that you agree with that. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, really, the last one is just to recall you that I have some books translated in language of Dante, dealing with this the subject of today, still available in library. And I mention also because, in fact, questions about the shape of space are very old questions, and people like Galileo, Kepler, and Newton has also proposed models for the shape of the universe. Well, I just mentioned the two recent books devoted to Galileo, Kepler, and Newton, published at La Lepre, and that I will discuss tomorrow at the Hopley Library. Thank you very much.
Abbiamo un po' di tempo per fare delle domande, se volete approfittare, perché non ci capiterà così spesso. Fatevi vedere, ci sono delle persone con dei microfoni, perché almeno riescono a sentire tutti. A proprio chi deve andare, ovviamente non c'è problema di scappure. Grazie soprattutto poi della chiarezza, perché è bello lo sforzo di aver parlato per voi in inglese, perché è di origine francese, quindi è stato per noi che ci ha fatto questo.
Mille grazie, beaucoup merci, merci pour la présentation très claire et très affascinante.
Merci.
Et en particulier les vidéos sur les trous noirs. Mais je vous pose une question. Dans la deuxième vidéo, il semble qu'il est possible qu'un corps il va à traverser le trou noir. Mais je sais que le trou noir, il va détruire la matière. C'est vrai ou non? Ou est-ce qu'il est possible de traverser la matière, le trou noir?
Yes, it's a very good and pertinent question, of course. In fact, the movie of the travel inside the black hole showed that when you tried to go on the other side, as soon as you penetrate into the black hole, you see the image of the other side of the wormhole, of the tunnel. But in fact, at the moment, everything becomes dark, because in fact, precisely, the wormhole collapsed as soon as you penetrate it. So, in fact, in general, physicists suggest that wormholes are not stable structures in the universe. They could exist in the ideal case, but as soon as you introduce a perturbation, it could be just a spaceship, of course, but even an elementary particle, the wormhole would collapse and you would not go through. But it's not finished. Theoretical physicists, said that if you introduce in your wormhole a kind of repulsive energy, and this exists because, for instance, the dark energy in the universe, which is responsible for the acceleration of the expansion, is this kind of negative energy. Now, it's a little bit science fiction process. Imagine that you have a very evolved civilization with a spaceship. It penetrates into the wormhole, and it induces negative energy into the wormholes, so it allows the walls of the wormhole not to collapse and to pass through. And there are real technical papers that study this process. So maybe it's a hope for the future interstellar travel.
Si. Una domanda che non so effettivamente se è una domanda, perché magari mi è sfuggito qualche aspetto, però ho notato una singolare corrispondenza tra il tipo di struttura che assume l'immagine dell'universo in corrispondenza di un buco nero, cioè una sorta di simmetria centrale con delle immagini duplicate, è lo stesso tipo di duplicazione che si supponeva esserci nella visione complessiva dell'universo. Allora, da là mi viene una delle ultime immagini che avete proiettato. Mi viene da chiedere, ha senso, è bizzarra o ha una qualche coerenza sostenere che esiste un'implicabilità tra i due fenomeni? E che magari possa essere sostenibile la presenza di un centro.
But in fact there are two different physical explanation. In the case of black holes, the duplication of images is just due to a gravitational lensing due to local curvature of space. And in fact the multiple images of the object will appear only in the direction of the gravitational lens, just behind the black hole. It's just a local optical illusion. In the case of the warp around universe, in fact, it is the space, the full space itself, which plays the role of the lens. So, in fact, all the ghost images are distributed all over the space, both in direction and also in time. So, in fact, it's very different from the gravitational lensing. It's the reason why I call that a topological lensing, where the ghost images are distributed all over the sphere. So it's very difficult to recognize the ghost images from ordinary images, whereas in gravitational lensing it's very easy. It would be complicated. And also you would not recognize also the ghost images, because you see the images, you see the same object, but with light rays that have traveled various paths in the universe with different lengths. So in fact you don't see you see the same object but at very different times of its life, and you will not recognize it, because between the ghost images there will be strong time evolution. Okay, so this is a basic difference between these two multiplication of images.
Okay, uno di qua.
Bonsoir professeur Luminet, David de la Champagne. Je voulais savoir, au-delà de comment fonctionne un trou noir, de savoir quel était le rôle du trou noir dans l'univers, dans chaque galaxie. Il semble y en avoir de plusieurs tailles, de plusieurs sortes, et particulièrement un super trou noir qui se trouve souvent au centre des galaxies. Et quelles sont leurs fonctions dans l'univers, parce qu'elles absorbent de la matière, de la lumière, qui ferait penser que finalement la matière finirait par disparaître, elle est toujours là.
Yes.
Donc quel serait le rôle des trous noirs italiens?
Yes.
Quel est le rôle des buchi neri nelle galassie, nell'universo in generale?
Yes, well, thank you for the question, but in fact it's a full subject for a full conference about black holes. So very quickly, I will speak about precisely the black hole physics in Venezia in 2 days. But well, now we are in Milano. It's true that there are black holes of various size in the universe. Most of the black holes are just produced by the gravitational collapse of stars, so they are called stellar mass black holes. There are millions of such small black holes in the disk of galaxies and all that. But one of the fascinating things is that at the center of each galaxy there is a giant black hole, a massive or supermassive black hole. Okay, and a massive black hole is a black hole whose mass is not only a few solar masses, but a few million or even a few billion solar masses. For instance, in the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way, we have in fact observed stars moving around an invisible object, which is in fact the central black hole, and we could estimate the mass of this galactic black hole to 4 million solar masses. But this is a relatively moderately giant black hole, because in other galaxies we observe now huge black hole with masses more than several billion solar masses. And last week it was discovered, well, it was published a paper in Nature, and I had many interviews with that, about the biggest black hole ever observed. It is in a faraway galaxy, in a very small galaxy, not a big one, a small galaxy, but the mass of this huge black hole is 17 billion solar masses. So in fact the size of this such a gigantic black hole is about the size of the full solar system. And so you can imagine that such a big black hole can attract many stars and swallow full stars. And in fact many years ago, well before this kind of big black hole were discovered, I had the theoretical idea of the process of destruction of stars by the tidal forces of a big black hole. And I calculated at the time the possible fact that you have a star that passes very close to a supermassive black hole, and in fact it is so much distorted, because just space is distorted, that the star itself is distorted, and it is in fact destroyed and can liberate gas. And I predicted at the time that the shape of the star during the crossing of the critical radius around the black hole is flattened into its orbital plane like a pancake. And when the star is flattened in a pancake, it is strongly heated and compressed, and it explodes and produces a burst of energy. And I call that the flambéed stellar pancakes. Okay? And 15 years, it was just a theoretical idea, so I put and 15 years later, it was observed. And now, with our big telescopes, every week, we observe what we call tidal disruption events, namely stars which are destroyed by big black hole and which produce a lot of starburst energy. So this is one example of the fascinating properties of the black hole at various scales in the universe.
Good evening, sir. I have two questions for you. The first one is, can you throw some light on dark energy and dark matter? And the second question is, inside the event horizon for a black hole, you have something called space-time reversal. Can you please elaborate on it?
J'ai pas bien entendu. Yeah, it was in English, but in fact the volume was too low, so I didn't hear
you. The first question is about dark matter and
About dark matter, yes.
And the second question is about space-time reversal inside an event horizon.
Okay, so about dark matter, it's again a full subject for a conference, I briefly mentioned that the present day observation of both microwave background and other observation suggests that in fact the energy and matter content of the present day universe is distributed like that. You have approximately 4% of all the energy matter which is in the form of atoms, which is called ordinary matter, ordinary atomic matter. So all the galaxies, stars, and including the not visible, the ordinary dark matter, which is made with atoms. Okay? Now you have elementary particle, which was probably produced by the early, very hot Big Bang universe, which would constitute what we call the cold dark matter, which is not of atomic nature. Okay? So this kind of particles are predicted by high energy theory, but presently they are not observed in the detector. And in fact, there is a good reason why they are not observed, because in fact, this kind of particles are predicted to be very weakly interacting with matter, so very weakly interacting with the detectors. The hope is that this kind of particle could be discovered because artificially produced by the Large Hadron Collision at CERN. Okay, at very high energy, we could reproduce the more or less the Big Bang condition and produce this kind of particles. But now, this kind of dark matter, non-atomic dark matter, would represent about 22% of the total. Now the rest is 70 or 74%. This is no matter, And this is pure energy. We call that a dark energy. And this dark energy has a very fascinating property. It is anti-gravitating. Namely, it has a repulsive effect on space. So in fact, since now, in the present-day universe, it is this kind of energy which dominates all the other forms of energy, that we conclude that the universe is accelerated, the expansion is accelerated. Okay? And this acceleration of the universe has really been observed independently of these theoretical arguments using supernova and various observations. And we know that today, the speed of expansion of the universe today is greater than the speed of expansion of the universe a few billion years ago. Okay, so this is for the first question. The second one, what happened inside the horizon, the event horizon? But precisely, I showed a movie where a theoretical spaceship goes inside the event horizon, and I tried to explain you that, of course, the shape of space is very strongly distorted, and maybe there is a structure like a wormhole structure. But as I explained in the previous question, it's probable that the structures are not really stable, and they would collapse when we penetrate. Maybe a last one?
Yes. I have one question for you. And as you mentioned in your presentation, the universe is complexifying in a way, so it's expanding, or new stars are formed and everything. And as we move back through the time near the Big Bang, so the universe used to be a simpler place. So my question is for you that as we move on to the future and the universe is expanding in terms of size, or its new stars are formed and everything, and it's complexifying in a way, do you think that new properties will emerge and we will have a different type of a universe in terms that its laws are even evolving as we go through the time? And will not stay as they are, just for us to discover them.
Thank you for the question. I showed in a very simple picture that at least from the Big Bang up to now, the story of the universe is story of expansion of space and dilution and cooling of the universe and making structure. Starting from a very homogeneous initial state, plasma, very hot plasma with elementary particle, lights and all that. In fact, during the evolution, there are fluctuations, and this fluctuation produce locally structure, and we have the apparition of atoms, and after the apparition of the first star, first galaxy and all that. And today we are in a universe which is, of course, on the large scale, globally homogeneous, namely simple in some sense, but at local scale, of course, it's very much structured. In fact, the full evolution of the universe is a kind of mixture of simplification, because in the future, if you have, for instance, a universe expanding forever, the universe will become more cooler and cooler and cooler, and the average temperature of the universe will tend to the absolute zero of temperature, and in fact the kind of complexity of the matter will disappear in order to get avoid infinitely expanding space. But there is a special thing also in the universe about complexity. It's just the apparition of life. And this is a fascinating property of the universe. Of course, now we are sure that life exists on Earth. We are not sure that it exists elsewhere, but probably it exists elsewhere. So a physical question is that, is the biological process of merging of life is really a physical property of the universe? In the sense that during the evolution of the universe, the global tendency of the universe is to become cooler and cooler and less structures. But in some special place of the universe, you will have the apparition of complexity going in the other way of the entropy, because you know about the entropy, which is a measure of structuration of the universe. When the universe evolves, the entropy grows. This means that we lost structure and we lost information. But just in the very restricted areas a privileged place in the universe, like the Earth, maybe on Mars, and probably on extra solar planets like the Earth and in other galaxies. There are very special places where you have, in fact, negative entropy, in some sense, and so you have organization of matter due to chemical and physical processes which can produce life. And the question unsolved, of course, it in the far away future, if this kind of complexification, very local complexification of matter leading to life, can sustain along the cooling of the universe, we don't know. Thank you.
Ringraziamolo.